This is the Filmmaking the Hard Way podcast. I am Josh Follin, and as is always the case, today I am speaking with a talented filmmaker in the low to micro-budget filmmaking space. This particular chat was with Diane Catsborough-Lynette about her role as basically everything, picture-related and story-related, on a short animated film titled A Perfect Day for a Walk. The only thing she didn't do was the music score and the sound design. That film is being featured on the Filmmaking the Hard Way Filmmaker Spotlight Series, which is my little way of celebrating filmmakers that are accomplishing a lot with a little. So I don't know, maybe this isn't even... It's funny, you're in a place where you kind of talked about, like, you're not even sure if you're in the industry. So maybe this question doesn't apply, but the first question I always ask is, what's the first dollar you earned?
First dollar I earned.
That would be entertainment related or related to this line of work.
I started getting into animation and kind of filmmaking as a for grad school.
Okay.
So it was grad school related. So I was looking for school jobs, I guess, that I could do while I was studying. So I was a teaching assistant for an animation class.
Okay.
I think closer to a commercial end would be when I started working for the company I currently work for. But as a student employee, they were starting a student animation team where they brought in commercial projects, working with BOCES as a client, and they were looking for a producer to as it continued to grow. So I volunteered and got the job and started.
Have you ever subjected yourself to any freelance bullshit at all yet?
I have. but that was a little bit later into it. It was funny. I started producing before I really felt like I knew animation. I was kind of learning it on the fly because in undergrad, I had studied English language and literature and creative writing and fine arts and like oil painting and stuff like that. So it wasn't really, I dabbled in it before, but I really didn't feel like a new animation, so I, for the producing, I learned on the job a bit, and then afterwards, as I felt like, okay, I made a film, I feel like I am getting to know this now, and that's when I started freelancing a bit.
Okay. Cool. Well, with A Perfect Day for a Walk, and I love doing this, I love the idea of doing this even like way late and after you've already released it and done festival stuff because you've had to say this a million times. So it's developed at this point. What is your elevator pitch of the film?
Oh.
It should be developed. I guess it doesn't have to be.
Well, yeah, bold assumptions because I didn't have to pitch it.
I just mean, how would you explain to someone? It doesn't have to be a pitch.
Sure.
Pitch is an overstatement.
You
called it the dog film.
The dog film. That was my internal nickname, I guess. I'm trying to recall the log line. This shouldn't be this hard. It's like a determined dog tries to get his owner out for a walk.
I think that's something like that you sent me for the dog.
So.
Okay.
So I had to, it was funny because I was looking for a way to say it without giving it away.
Sure.
And it would read differently before and after the film.
What's the dog's name in the movie?
Howie. Yeah. Funny story.
When was Howie in your life?
Howie, I actually never had a dog.
In your entire life?
In my entire life.
Get the fuck out of here.
The closest thing I had was a hamster for a year.
Okay.
Almost a year.
When in your life was that?
That was when I was working in LA. I was a graphic designer.
Okay,
that was
so adult, not a kid.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I wasn't. I didn't have any pets as a kid.
Interesting. What the hell then?
Well, I mean, it's inspired in small part by the hamster. That was a pretty lonely period of my life, but I was thinking about the hamster a little bit, about the people in my life, and kind of this. Those who support you in with the good and bad, and kind of how you don't always see them, or they're not always with you to support you in those moments. So, that was kind of where my mind was coming from.
Okay.
So funny story. You asked about Howie's name. So that actually, because I never had a dog, I kind of never had the kid naming a dog moment. So I wasn't sure what the dog would be named. So I actually went to ask one of my supervisors to ask her kid to, if she got a dog, what would she name?
Okay, so it's entirely hypothetically, not even a real world example. Mm-hmm. Okay. And how would you, if you were to tell someone the roles I played for, you know, again, this is a little more, I love that this is the first interview I'm doing for this because it's like the best possible example of just like DIY, do everything myself. Mm. It's beautiful. Perfect serendipity in that regard. But how would you describe what your roles were for it? What are your titles?
It'd be faster to list what I didn't do. I mean, it was...
But that's what I mean, though. Yeah. Especially with animation, because it's obviously a different discipline than live action.
Right. It's possible. It's more possible to do it all yourself. I feel like live action, you kind of... There's so many moving pieces and equipment that it kind of can't... It ends up becoming a group effort at some point.
It's definitely harder, too. There are psychopaths out there that can do and try to and some impressive. Even achieving doing quite a bit if not all of it, but yeah, for sure. I love the whole process. I love editing the most because you're just alone in the room. Mm-hmm. You don't have to rely on anyone, and that's, you know, my issues about relying on other people.
I'm similar that way. Yeah. And one of the reasons I really liked animation and getting into it was like, oh, I could do this all myself. Yeah. It doesn't require, well, I could. It's mostly actually just sitting in your room, kind of working when you're in your computer, drawing, planning, doing stories, editing, coloring, all that. Everything from most things from start to finish. Right. It's just you in your room, the computer.
So have you I assume you've always been inclined and interested in the actual illustrating aspect.
Drawing, it's interesting because I didn't see it as a career path till much later. I come from a family of artists. My grandfather was a painter. So all of my, my cousins and I kind of grew up drawing, and I was the youngest of that group of cousins, so everyone was always better than I was, so I never thought any of it was good enough, you know? That's, I was more of a writer, telling stories, writing. I started undergrad as an English major, and then I took a drawing class as an elective, and it became a double major. It was funny, the professor convinced me to declare a double major because it would help me get into the classes because you get priority if you're declared. And then at the end, I had to choose between doing a thesis in English and art. I could have done both, but it wouldn't have worked out. So I went with art. Yeah, and I guess I like doing it. I still don't really think, like, I'm good at it, I don't know.
pretty damn good, Brian. Had my grown ass crying at a computer. It was a clear enough of a depiction to get me doing
well.
So I presume no fundraising happened.
Just, no fundraising.
Yeah, just 100% just did that. So even so, with the, you said, what was it, the composer and then
one the of sound design. Mix.
Were the two outside?
Yeah.
And those are just, did friends help you out or?
So actually at the beginning I recruited, because there's a film school and they're kind of, every semester they hold a little online Zoom event where they bring people together and kind of look for collaboration, because there's students studying sound and composing and they want to get practice working with filmmakers. So there's kind of mutual interest in their requirements for the classes and our requirements for our classes. I mean, obviously hopefully it's beyond just requirements because you're doing it because you want to do it. But anyway, it brings them together and the filmmakers kind of pitch their project or say what they're looking for, things like that. So initially I had a composer and a sound designer. I never met...
So before you even started the project, you're saying?
No, I was about in the story stage. Okay. That's kind of usually when that happens.
Because I wanted to ask, did you consider trying to do either of those things yourself?
I thought of it, and I would have if I needed to. I don't think I could have done music because I never learned it. Sound, I probably would have gotten help with mixing.
That's such a different thing. That's something I won't even try to touch either in all my, like... I'll fucking figure it out myself, watch a YouTube video and teach myself how to do anything normally. But yeah, sound is like, I don't know. I look at the waveform. I'm like, I'm not gonna, I can't do that.
Yeah, because like sound design, I do a little bit. Because like, I have visions. Well, in the storytelling, it makes sense to address it. Because when you're thinking about how to convey the information, I don't want it to be all visual. And then sound is kind of an afterthought. You add it in to make you believe it. If you're a character.
But good sound designers, though.
That's in the whole nother.
You hand it to them, and like you can give them your stupid little list of ideas, but they're gonna have
absolutely
10 times more things. That the best story I always tell is about one of the third feature maybe was about these five guys basically locked in a shitty apartment in Brooklyn, and you know I had all our ideas and stuff, and he's like, because like the whole thing it's like this tense thriller, they're like in this really tense 90 minute moment. And he's like, why don't we have like really subtle arguing on the other sides of the walls? Because they're in this shitty. I'm like, oh, that's fucking brilliant. And like, you know, your audience isn't even going to think of that. They're not going to even notice it probably, but it's going to add tension subliminally. And
Like, so that's exactly the thing. I love working with people who kind of bring in their own expertise and their creativity into it. It's great. So
that's the tough part about doing it all yourself. You don't get that, that influx. Get that.
So originally had a composer, a student composer, but it really wasn't the tone I was looking for, and I wanted only partial scoring. He wanted to do all of it, and things didn't work out, so I was kind of left, I think maybe about a month left of time, and I had to decide if I would make it just without music, or find another somebody else. And at that point it was too late to find another student composer. They were all booked at that point. So I went.
You were on some kind of like
timeline. It was a class project. So it had a timeline. It had to finish the screen by the end of the semester.
Okay, that's tough.
I thought about just not doing music at all. I felt like it would be better to have it without music than to have not good music. Like, if it's overdone, which was what I was struggling with, and didn't want it to feel like it's trying to push you to feel a certain way, pet peeve.
Sure.
So, I thought, well, if this doesn't work out, then I'll do without music, but let me try this one thing. And I went to Fiverr, and I talked to a bunch of people, and I found this person, and it worked out. It was great.
Now, sadly, there is always more amazing available labor. Than there are is work for them to do.
Yep.
Okay, so the timeline of it all. So you said it was for a class project. So is that like, so you're in like a semester or quarter situation, semesters I presume, and you have like, you guys are gonna have to do this film. So you only have what is
So the... we started bringing ideas at the end of August, and it needed to be done by the beginning of December.
Okay. 3 months-ish.
Yeah.
Okay. When exactly, what year?
That was 2022.
2022,
okay.
Copy.
Yeah, I made 3 films that year. It was a lot.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot.
Yeah, well, it was all short though.
Still.
You say that like that's, especially if you're doing it all yourself, it diminishes the amount of work. Every project there is a fixed cost and labor associated with it that does not matter. The length is irrelevant. There's still like these fixed costs and fixed labor.
I guess so. But the first one I did was a 30-second film.
Okay.
That was pretty scaled down, yeah.
Okay, so what would you say your most notable constraint was? And like the obvious thing is like, okay, you don't have any money to hire, outsource, whatever. So that's a given. So like, what was the thing do you think... that you would say anyways, and maybe you don't have to have an answer to this, I guess, especially if it's a project where you kind of like expected to tackle it all, but the idea behind the question normally is like, okay, what did not having money, like what was the thing that you stressed out about or worried about or whatever, whatever the negative emotion would have been, because you didn't have maybe the ideal amount of resources, or didn't even maybe it wouldn't have, just you were trying to do it all yourself, so you got into doing it, and it was the thing that was the most frustrating or the most taxing or whatever it might have been. The, the hardest part about not having unlimited resources, basically. Right.
It's funny because I got into filmmaking in like academic approach, not really with experience in the industry. So actually, I don't think I fully understood the concept of budget till I made several films. So like, I was starting to wrap my head around it. So I had no assumption of having more than what I did. So I kind of, it was ingrained in me to just work with what I've got and what I can do myself.
Okay.
I do think that because I'm so story focused, I tend to spend a lot of time in the pre-production, just figuring out what the story is going to be, which leaves little less time for animation. And when you have to draw everything, otherwise it doesn't exist, it's kind of a struggle. And in my classmates, I saw a lot of, well, usually one or the other, they either really like spending a lot of time in animation and looking the drawing, making the drawings look good, or this polishing the story, and I was definitely the latter. So I feel like if I had other people, or if I had more time to finish things, I don't know that, but I would have leaned towards, well, I wonder if I can make the drawing better. I can wonder if I could animate more things. Could I do things with the background? Things like that. Yeah.
I guess because you're on this, you know, normally with these independent projects, you don't have like the class constraint. So
right, yeah.
You don't necessarily have a timeline, like.
Which is good or bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to be like, okay, I have to do this, and it's right, can put you, whatever the saying is, nose to the grindstone or whatever. But one of the, because, I am a pretty firm subscriber to the money, time, quality paradigm. Mm-hmm. And the one beauty about independent filmmaking is if you can, like, give yourself the time.
Sure.
You can usually find whatever thing you're trying.
Yeah, you're not...
At whatever budget you have to find it at.
Right.
If you can spend the time. But yeah, if you take time out of an independent scenario, you're really...
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, no, the struggle is really that if you... if you're not able to find a satisfactory solution with the limited time and resources, well, too bad. You have to figure something out.
Or give up the quality thing, which, of course, no one wants to do.
Yeah, no one wants to do that.
Yeah. So kind of the flip side of that,
sure.
What's the most memorable benefit, do you think, of whether it would have been that time constraint, if that's the economy we're working with as opposed to money, or whatever it would have been. What do you think having to work in whatever the constraint was that you think is the biggest, most prominent constraint of the project, what's the most beneficial thing in that, do you think? As far as like, that you can look at the end product and go, that wouldn't have been... is what I wanted it, or what I'm happy with it being now, had this not been the case, I guess, is maybe a better way to put that.
Well, I mean, I think, and I wouldn't necessarily say this still applies, but at least at the moment, because I was so in that early learning stage, it really helped to have that limited scope, because it helped me not be too ambitious. I feel like if I had set out to do more, which I would have definitely done if I had more time and money, then I would have struggled with the, not even with finishing it, but with the weight of, oh, I put this so much into this, this needs to be good. Whereas because it was for class, because it was only 3 months, I was thinking like, well, if it reaches a certain quality and if I learn these things.
Did they have a time length, like as part of the requirement or whatever, or were you, did you have agency over that for the most part?
Yes and no. They got worried about your ability to finish it if it got too long for obvious reasons, but there wasn't really like it needs to be under that would be meaningful. I mean, I think it needs to be 20 minutes or shorter, but nobody's finishing that in that
20 minutes
time
animation
anyway. Yeah, no.
I've been working much of the way that I talked about VR, like the animation is also something fascinating, because you're not bound by these constraints. Like the story can be anything. All you have to do is do the work, whatever that visual thing we're looking at in illustration form.
You can have anything that you can draw.
Right, exactly. And then anime too. Yes. Like that's not, that seems to be actually the harder part, at least for the particular project I'm talking about. The illustrations come fast, the animation, and that could just be workload for the individuals involved, whatever, maybe. But yeah, it's shocking to me how long it's taken.
To get, well, I mean, that's only, what only, happens when you have go frame by frame by frame.
Only it's probably 7 minutes. And, you know, and again, this is a, there's a lot of extenuating circumstances, I think, but this is something I shot in 20, mm-hmm. the interview I shot. Originally, I had to edit it at 35. I've cut it down to like 27 at this point to help because the animation was taking so long, and which that's a perfect example of what I was just saying. Right. I think it's a better film, 7 minutes shorter. So 8 minutes shorter. So that was a benefit of not having the money to have a whole animation team, I think. Mm-hmm. But yeah, very frustrating. Well, with how
yeah, and different takes. People draw at different speeds.
Right.
And yeah.
For sure.
And I don't feel confident to say that I draw well, but I do draw fast, and okay. I feel like it's affected my scope.
What's the biggest mistake you made?
Biggest mistake? I did overestimate time a little bit. There was one scene at the end that I didn't have time to do what I wanted to do, which, you know, when the door opened and the light comes in.
Okay.
So that was originally done in what do you call it? Like, not the actual way it's supposed to be done. I had to figure out a short, easy way, a fast way to do it.
Well, so what did you want it to be?
So actually, the version that's up on YouTube, I fixed it.
Oh, okay.
Because afterwards, but I didn't.
I was going to ask with this time straight whether you would get gone back and
gone back. Well, yeah. but no, it's screened in front of the whole school with the old okay. version, and it drove me a little bit nuts. But
sure. That is how it works for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so, and you've made a few films since, so this may have already been rectified, but coming out of the project, what was the thing that you most were like, I'm going to do that totally different? Or I want to, at least. I guess it doesn't, you can have the aspiration to want to do it differently and then realize that reality dictates otherwise, but.
Well, I don't know. I don't know.
And if it just went so perfectly, is, you know, obviously.
No,
maybe.
It didn't. But. Yeah, no, I think I tend to flip back and forth a little bit. When I do something a little bit more straightforward, like storytelling, and then I want to, by the time I'm finishing that project, I'm usually like, I want to do something totally weird and difficult to understand, experimental, things like that. And then by the time I'm finishing that, I'm like, I want to go back to the... Well, you hear a story and then you get it, sort of thing. Right, okay. So I flip back and forth.
So it was just like thematic?
Yeah.
Just wanted to switch it up as far as what the type of material?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I hear that. Is there something other than the nuts and bolts of it that... I mean, you already kind of said that, you know, you do animation because it's this whole apparatus, live action is this whole apparatus that you know, just maybe overwhelming, seems more expensive, whatever it might be. Are there things that you want to do live action? What is your, are you hardline animation track or you?
I'm curious about live action. I don't feel like I know enough about it to be able to do anything with it, but
okay, so
that's
the first question then. Have you even done like little fuck around things?
No. It's intrigued me, but it felt like probably the control freak in me is like, animation, if I don't like it, I can tweak it, I can change it. Live action, it's like, there's so many things that happen without me choosing it to.
Right.
Well, probably because I'm not good, but That confuses me.
Every time you introduce another human being, that's an unknown variable into any equation. So it's a given that it's going to be more unpredictable.
I do want to work with more people. I mean, even in animation, maybe that's a thing for something that I want to try differently. Is I do want to try working with more people. I think the allure of animation and the fact that I can do everything is that if things don't go right, the project doesn't have to die. Like, I can keep it going if I see the value and put in the time. I think that's what I like about it. It's kind of a, I can fix it sort of thing. But I do, like we were talking about earlier, about the experts kind of bringing in their own creativity on that, on each department. I do really, really like that. So I...
That's certainly one of the cool things about live action is that you do have to surrender control over a bunch of things, and if you get good at picking who those human beings are that you surrender the control to, you can pleasantly surprise left and right, and that's a beautiful thing about the collaboration aspect.
Yeah, and even in animation, the art department's kind of aspect of it, the illustration, art style, character design, things like that are not really something that I feel like I'm strong in, so I think if somebody brings in all the ideas of the equivalent of the sound designer, it's like, oh, what if we did this? That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Okay. Define, and I guess it doesn't have to be filmmaking as, I don't know, whatever, a certain type of term. You, in your own words, have kind of said you're not even sure that's what you're doing, so don't relegate it to having to define this phrase that I'm saying. Define what it means to independent creation of whatever your creative work is. Like, what does independent, the independent component of that, how would you define that? What does that mean?
Independent. I think, kind of going back to what I just said about if it, you retain the agency and will to push it through if things don't line up, if people are not, if you don't get the help you feel like you need.
I like that. I like that as a definition for sure. Yeah.
Sometimes it just doesn't work out, and then if the project has to die, well,
right.
That's...
It's just you're the only disappointed person, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay. Well, the film's coming out, so and it's already done its festival thing, so probably nothing. You probably don't have anything to say about that. But other than, I guess, there's Tadpole. Is there anything else that you are trickling out right now that you would want to have people hear
Tadpole,
you say?
Is that should be soon that it becomes public? I think at least.
What is the platform for taking something like that public? By the way.
That's actually on my list to research. Okay. I have to figure out how to put it out there.
South by Southwest doesn't have like a fucking, this is how we put things out.
No.
For that. No?
That'd be funny. I think I'll end up putting it on YouTube. I think they do 360 video that you're able to browse in.
Yep.
Yeah. So
the Oculus app has a YouTube app that allows you to just do all sorts of crazy shit.
Probably what I will do. But yeah, we'll see.
Okay.
And I did also make a thesis film last year.
Okay.
So that is currently in the film festival circuit. It was at Woodstock.
I fucking love Woodstock.
That's great.
One of my favorite festivals.
Yeah.
Did you go?
Yes, I did. It was the first festival I drove to.
Okay. That's great. Yeah, you're close enough. It's worth it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it's such a cool Ask for Jane played there, and that, especially that film too, because that's why Woodstock programmed it, because it's like just fucking, I don't know, it's this film I did about. Yeah. Know my shit or not, but it's like, it's about a group of women in the late 60s, early 70s that started this legal abortion network, pre Roe versus Wade, so just could not be more in the Woodstock spirit. So, premiering that there at the Playhouse, like 500 people, 500 some seats, and just it was just such a, everyone, all their volunteers are like these towny people that are like wildly successful and wildly artistic, like grown ass adults, as opposed to the volunteers. And a lot of festivals are like 19-year-old kids, you know. Like the guy that was driving us around the whole time was like this, I don't know, 55-year-old retiree that had like made $1 billion doing some sort of software something, and now he was just like a full-time artist in Woodstock, and he takes
it's
2 weeks out of his year.
It's a very interesting community.
Yeah, no, for sure. It is such a wild, completely different than any other festival environment I've ever been in. Yeah, I love Woodstock. It's great. So that's cool. Okay, so that just premiered, just a couple months ago. That's October,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so that will be going around,
okay.
I hope. Yeah.
Okay. And what is it?
It's called The Babysitter. It's 8 minutes, and I'll was also an independent project, pretty much.
Not 360 anime, just...
Not 360, yeah.
Caveman flat screen.
Yes. Yeah. No, I made the 360, and like, I kind of... And a lot of people were asking me, oh, is this your thing now? Are you going to do more? I'm like, not at the moment. But get in, so my justification is that it only needs... I'll make it in 360 if it needs to be, because the story for Tadpole... It wouldn't be the same any other way.
Okay.
But it doesn't need to be surround to be immersive.
Sure, sure.
Or shouldn't. So, went back to old 16x9.
Okay. Okay. That's the last one. Yeah, that's done too. Socials and stuff, that we'll put all that on the website. Cool, okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
This was cool. You can watch Diane's film, A Perfect Day for a Walk, on the Filmmaking the Hard Way Filmmaker Spotlight website at nyehentertainment.com/spotlight or by hunting it down on the NYEH YouTube channel. Links to both those destinations will be in the show notes, along with links to the rest of Diane's work. You can submit your own micro-budget project of any length, short, feature, the festival programming limbo in between, via that same URL, nyehentertainment.com/spotlight. Thank you for listening. Hope you got something useful out of the conversation for your own filmmaking endeavors, and keep making cool, edgy, independent shit so I don't have to start watching AI-generated superhero movies.